Indubitably. So if you guys want me to play my stuff, I can. The only problem is, like, the first file, like, this is Movies for the Blind. This lady describes what's going on in the shows. And I found that some of the shows are in stereo, even though they're not, the way they're made, that sometimes when you put them in mono, you hear her voice more than the show. So if you guys notice any problems with anything, just let me know and I can pick a different, a Batman story or something.
No, let's give it a shot, Max, especially if you describe what Ellie May is not wearing.
Well, I don't, yeah, this is, I'll play it right now then, in just a sec. I'll just quickly tell you, this is from a podcast/website called moviesfortheblind.com. This lady named Valerie Hunter takes public domain shows and describes them for blind and visually impaired people. They're all audio files. Most movies are two audio files long. Each file is between 30 to 40 minutes. In this case, we're doing three different Beverly Hills shows, episode 1, 2, and 3. And that's, I'll start it in a second here and hope you guys enjoy it.
Movies for the... Speech off.
This is Movies for the Blind, episode 256. The Beverly Hillbillies. The Clampets strike oil.
Man, be a dang fool, Lee Horowitz.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. Some TV for the blind this time. Now, here in the U.S., where I am right now, my parents' favorite TV show is Duck Dynasty. It's a hit show here, and if you haven't heard of it, it's a reality show about a family in rural Louisiana who have gotten very rich from a business making duck and animal calls. A part of its appeal is that it's structured kind of like a sitcom, with some wacky characters, funny situations, and the family gathered to say grace over supper at the end of every episode. It's actually part of a long tradition of TV shows about rural folks finding their own ways to deal with a windfall. It started back in the late 50s with a guy named Paul Henning. He was a successful radio and TV writer who'd taken a little time off. He drove around Civil War sites in and around the Ozark Mountains, not far from where he grew up and used to camp as a boy. And he considered people from Civil War times and current locals who stuck to where they were and were resistant to modern changes. What might they think of a place like Southern California, where he'd made his life? It gave him the idea for a TV series, which became a hit. And this is the first episode of it. First broadcast September 26th, 1962. This is The Beverly Hillbillies, in an episode called The Clampett Strike Oil, on a palm tree-lined street.
This is Beverly Hills. And here come
the Beverly Hillbillies.
The Beverly Hillbillies. Four people ride an old jalopy truck with a rocking chair in the back, starring Buddy Ebsen as Jed, a thin, grizzled older man, with Irene Ryan as frowning granny, Donna Douglas as Ellie Mae, a young blonde woman in men's clothes, and Max Baer as muscular, dark-haired Jethro. Created and produced by Paul Henning. Written by Paul Henning. Directed by Ralph Levy. Jed rides beside Jethro in the truck.
Well, come on, let's find that house we bought.
They reach a driveway.
House they bought?
And head for a gate.
In Beverly Hills?
Whoa, wait a minute, hold it.
The film stops.
How could a bunch of hillbillies possibly buy a mansion like this? Let's take them back to their home and see how this whole thing started.
The truck goes backwards. At the foot of a hill, smoke billows from the chimney of a cabin with a porch on the front. Jed walks around from the back, carrying a shotgun and trailed by a hound dog. They step onto the porch and inside. Jed shuts the door, steps past a fireplace and Granny, who sits mending.
Jed,
he sets down the gun.
You gotta do something about that young'un of yourn.
She holds up torn jeans.
How'd that happen?
Fighting with a bobcat.
Get hurt?
I reckon so. It went limping off on three legs.
I swear, I don't know what I'm gonna do about that girl.
He pumps water into a sink.
Well, the first thing to do is to get her into a drink.
He washes his hands.
She's getting too big to be wearing man's duds. Looky here. She's done popped the buttons off of her shirt again.
Well, Ellie Mae carries herself proud, with her shoulders thrown back.
It ain't her shoulders that's popping these buttons.
Jed takes a basin from the sink.
Well, female woman. Time to start acting like one.
He empties it.
Well, one of these days, some boy will come along and start courting her.
They came courting when she was 12. What did she do?
He sits with a grinder.
She whopped the tar out of him.
Well, it ain't fitting. Girl running around as wild as a cougar, wrestling, fighting, and hunting. She ought to be doing woman's work. Happen me with the steel.
He fills a pipe.
Yeah, I'll speak to her.
Oh.
Granny stands.
That reminds me.
She sets down her sewing and steps behind the chair.
Better go down and stomp out the fire under that mess.
She goes to an open back door.
Hold on now, Granny. You ain't gonna stomp out no fire like that, are you?
Huh?
She looks down.
Oh, of course not. Don't want to burn your shoes.
She steps out of her old boots and goes barefoot.
Pa? Granny, somebody open the door.
Jed does.
Howdy, Pa.
And Ellie Mae walks in carrying a man over her shoulder.
What you got there?
She flops him onto a table.
Stranger?
He's unconscious.
Where'd you get him?
I gave him with a rock.
Where?
He was skulking around down by the sloop. Figured he might be a revenue.
He ain't no revenue.
Then can I keep him?
Of course not.
Well, I called him.
No matter.
Well, he won't be no trouble. I could keep him out in the smokehouse.
Ellie Mae, you can't keep people like they were dogs and cats.
Granny hops in the back doorway.
Oh, that's hard.
Then steps into a water bucket, making steam rise. She shakes her head with relief. Then notices the stranger.
Who's that?
She steps out.
Some feller Ellie found nosing around.
Beaming with the rocks, so it'd be easier to tote.
Dear fellas from the petroleum company.
What's a petroleum?
I don't know. He asked me if he could do some wildcatting down by the slough. I said, help yourself. We're glad to get rid of the critters.
What he said?
He kind of laughed. The last on him, there ain't no wildcats down there at that slough.
No, it's too full of oil. Oh.
The stranger comes too, sitting up.
What happened?
He looks around at them.
Well, this here is the Clampett place. I'm Jed Clampett, my young and Ellie Mae, and Granny. Granny says you've been doing some wildcatting.
There's no need to. Mr. Clampett, that swamp of yours is full of oil.
I could have told you that.
Well, my company would like to pump it out.
Yeah, I'd like that too, but I just can't afford to have it done.
No, you don't understand.
The stranger gets up.
You wouldn't have to pay for it.
Oh, I don't take favors from strangers.
No, Mr. Clampett, you see, you're a very rich man.
Jed turns to Ellie Mae.
How big a rock did you bean him with?
No bigger than a hedge apple.
Listen, I've got to call my office in Tulsa. Have you got a telephone?
A what?
A telephone? Well, maybe one of your neighbors has one. It's a, well, down in this country, it's probably a box attached to the wall. And, you talk into it, and they can hear you in Tulsa.
Granny looks at him dubiously.
Maybe you'd better sit down for a spell.
Oh, I haven't time. Listen, where's the nearest airfield?
Airfield?
You know, Granny, that's one of them air fields sets up in the air.
Jed and Granny share a wink.
Oh, never mind. I'll fight it myself. Listen, now don't you sell that swamp till you hear from me. I'm flying to Tulsa.
The stranger walks out.
Now he thinks he's got wings.
With the next sunrise, the rooster crows. As Granny stirs something on the stove, Ellie Mae steps in from another room.
Morning, Granny.
She stretches in a tight shirt.
Wash them buttons, child.
She smiles and approaches her.
Granny!
Jed kicks aside the back door holding a small pig.
Them pigs yours got into the corn.
She peers at it.
Did they drink much?
I reckon they did. This here little fellow was kicking blue blazers out of the mule.
That's the trouble with razorbacks. They such a mean drunk.
Jed hands it to her, and she steps to the front door.
This wouldn't happen if you'd stay in the house where you belong.
She takes it out to the porch. Later, a helicopter hovers in the sky, carrying the pilot, the stranger, and an older man.
There it is, Mr. Brewster.
Brewster looks down at the swamp.
From the tests and surveys, I'd say that's going to be one of the richest pools since East Texas.
News like this is bound to get out. Let's go down and get Clampett's name on a deal.
Meanwhile, Granny runs into the cabin.
Where's the gun? Where's the gun?
She turns to Jed, cleaning it.
What's the matter?
You want to see what just flew over Blueberry Ridge?
What?
The dad blamed this biggest bird you ever laid eyes on.
Probably just an overgrown chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk nothing. That kid could make off with the hog. Hurry up, put that gun together.
The helicopter descends a little.
No room to land near the cabin, Mr. Brewster. It's too rocky and hilly. Then let's get the sling ready to be lowered.
Well, Mr. Brewster, that might be dangerous.
Hang the danger. We're going to be the first oil company down there if it kills you.
Me?
Don't worry. If it's safe, I'll follow you.
In the cabin, Jed loads the gun.
Granny, I see it. There it is.
Land of mercy, look at that.
Out a window, they watch the stranger being lowered.
What you doing, Granny?
That thing's only got one claw, but danged if it ain't grabbed up a man.
The stranger hangs on in the sling, wearing a jumpsuit. Jed looks out.
Just from over the house. I'll get it on the other side.
With the gun, Granny runs through the front door and out with Ellie Mae following. Jed watches. The hound dog looks up.
You feel it, Granny?
She steps in the doorway.
Nope, but I made it drop that stranger.
She continues on inside. And Ellie Mae returns with him over her shoulder again, flopping him on the table. Later, the old truck barrels through the woods. Jethro drives with an older woman riding.
Granny!
Jed runs into the cabin.
Yes, Jed?
Granny, grab a hold of something and hang on. Cousin Pearl and an overgrown son of hers is headed right for the cabin of that old truck.
Heaven protect us!
The truck careens around the front yard and around the cabin. Jed hangs onto the chimney.
They sure want the chicken house.
Pearl staggers in.
Jed, I'm sure sorry about the chicken house, but nobody gets hurt.
Jethro stumbles in with a chicken.
Jethro, I told you to get rid of them worn-out brakes.
I did, Ma. That's how come we ain't got none.
Get on out and let the chicken house back on its foundation.
He goes back out.
Jed? Jed, Ellie Mae came running over to my place, and she said you sold the swamp to some oil company.
Jed and Granny look out back.
Well, yeah, I guess I did.
He steps back in.
What did they pay you for?
Well, they ain't paid me nothing yet. That Brewster fella said he'd bring the money later.
He sits.
How much they gonna pay you?
Well, he said that depends some on how much oil they could pump out.
Well, he must have mentioned some figure. What was it?
Now, Pearl, you know that old swamp won't work shucks.
Granny returns.
Jed Clampett, you got slickered and you're ashamed to admit it. That's just what I told you. Granny, how much they gonna pay him?
All right, I'll tell you. He said it run somewhere between 25 and 100.
25 and 100?
I know it don't sound like much, but Mr. Brewster seemed to set great store by the fact he's gonna pay me in some new kind of dollar.
There ain't no new kind of dollar.
Well, it's new to me. I've heard of gold dollars, silver dollars, paper dollars, but he says he's going to pay me in, what do you call them, Granny?
Million dollars.
Yeah.
Million dollars?
He wrote the whole thing out on this piece of paper. Here, you can see for yourself.
Pearl gets out her glasses and reads the document.
Let's see here now. Thanks in heaven.
She sits.
Give me the jug. It's empty, but I'll fetch some.
I'll go, Granny.
Jed gets up and takes the jug to the front door.
Jed?
Pearl stands and steps to him.
You're a millionaire. A millionaire.
Yeah, that's what that Brewster fella kept calling me. I didn't know just how to take it.
He meant you're rich.
Me?
The richest man in these hills. Maybe in the whole state. Oh, Jed, you can have anything you want. Do anything you want. Go any place you want.
Yeah, that's another thing he kept saying. He said he reckoned I'd be moving away from here soon. What do you think, Pearl? You think I ought to move?
Jed, how can you even ask? Look around you. You're 8 miles from your nearest neighbor. You're overrun with skunks, possums, coyotes, bobcats. You use kerosene lamps for light. You cook on a wood stove, summer and winter. You're drinking homemade moonshine, washing with homemade lye soap.
and your bathroom is 50 feet from the house, and you ask, should you move?
Yeah, I reckon you're right. Man, be a dang fool to leave all this.
He steps out, and Pearl reels back. Later, she steps up to Jed on the porch.
There you are, Jed. You misunderstood me. I meant you should move away. And you know where I'd go if I was you?
Where?
California.
California?
Yes, sir. Beverly Hills, California.
He steps down, thinking.
Jed, remember the time that your pa took us to Eureka Springs to see the movie picture?
He sits.
Yeah.
Well, the actors that make their movie pictures live in Beverly Hills.
Go on.
Yes, sir.
Well, don't you? Isn't that something? Living in the same neck of the woods with old Tom Mix.
It sure would. And we could come visit you.
She peers over her glasses.
You know what else they say about California?
What?
She sits beside him.
It don't get cold out there.
What don't get cold out there?
Nothing don't get cold out there. They don't have no snow or no ice.
Can't they bring some in?
They don't want it. That's why it'd be so good for Granny. Remember last winter when she slipped on the ice and broke her hip?
Yeah, poor old woman. She was limping for 2 days.
Well, that couldn't happen in California because they don't have no ice.
How come?
I don't know how come, but Granny'd sure like it, and we could visit you.
She peers over her glasses again as he whittles.
You know what else they say about California?
Maybe Jethro know how come there's no ice. He's going to school.
We could ask him.
She turns to him working on the truck.
Jethro?
Yeah, Ma?
Come on over here. Speaking of school, Ellie Mae could get herself a fine education out there in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, Ma?
Your rich uncle's got a question he'd like to ask you.
What rich uncle, Ma?
Your rich uncle, Jade.
Jethro? How come there's no ice in California?
Pearl looks at her son.
Don't look at me. I didn't take it.
Well,
I didn't, Ma.
Oh, get out of here.
Well, you always do. I don't know.
He walks away.
I was saying, Jed, folks claim California's got it all beat. Why, things grow twice as big out there.
Jethro would be a whopper, wouldn't he?
He could help you move. He's awful handy at lifting and toting, and he could drive you out in my truck.
I tell you what, Pearl. I'm going to have to study on this. When that Brewster fella comes back, I'll ask him what he thinks.
Later, Brewster sits at the table with him.
Well, your cousin is right about that, Mr. Clampett. Beverly Hills is a choice residential area, and lots of millionaires do settle there.
Folks like me, huh?
Well, millionaires.
And movie stars, too.
Well,
is Tom Mix there?
No. Mr. Mix is dead.
Oh? Oh, yeah. What's the matter with me? Remember, Pearl, he got shot at the end of that picture.
Pearl nods, and Brewster looks down at some documents.
Well, there are plenty other movie stars, and that's where Jed wants to live. Ain't it, Jed?
She peers over her glasses again.
I do like the notion of living in the hills. Never could stand flat country.
Mr. Clampett, I think it only fair. I think you may have a wrong idea about Beverly Hills.
Is that where you live?
No, my home is in Tulsa.
Well, see, maybe you could get us a place there in your neighborhood.
Mr. Clampett, let's not beat around the bush. You will love Beverly Hills.
And that's it. Can you steer Jade onto a good place?
No, I can get the bank out there to handle it for him.
He'd like a nice big place with plenty of room for his kinfolk to visit him.
She peers at Jed over her glasses, and Brewster nods.
I would like a nice roomy place if I could afford it. Oh,
Mr. Clampett, with your money, you can afford the Taj Mahal.
Okay, I'll take it.
Well, no, you see, I was just making a little joke.
Oh, well, go right ahead.
Well, you see, the Taj Mahal is in India.
Not laughing, Jed and Pearl glance at each other.
Mr. Brewster, you're a nice fellow, but I've heard better jokes.
Granny walks in with a bucket.
Is the foreigner staying to supper?
I'm ashamed to say I ain't asked him. How about it?
He stands.
I don't think so.
Oh, no trouble. What you cooking tonight, Granny?
Mustard greens and possum innards.
Did you hear that, Mr. Brewster?
Very clearly.
Want to change your mind?
Not this time.
Well, if you should happen to come back tomorrow, we'll be having leftovers. That's the thing about possum innards. He's just as good the second day.
Jed lets Brewster out the front door. Later, the truck is loaded up.
Kelly, if old Duke sits there with you, there ain't gonna be room for Granny.
Oh, that's all right, Paul. Granny ain't gone.
Duke's the hound dog.
Who says she ain't?
She says she ain't.
That's right, Uncle Jed. She's just sitting on the back porch in her rocker, and she says that's as close to California as you're gonna get her.
We'll see about that. Dang if I ain't got me the muliest womenfolk. We ain't never gonna get there.
Jed steps through the cabin to Granny sitting out back.
Now, what's all this nonsense about you ain't going to California?
Ain't no license to it. If the good Lord had wanted me in California, he'd have put me in California.
Maybe he's just getting around to it. The book says he moves in mysterious ways.
Well, if he moves me, I'll go. But you and Big Jethro ain't a-budging me.
Jed bends down to her.
Mr. Beverly Hills sounds like the kind of place you'd like. That Brewster fella says they got smogs out there.
What's a smog?
Well, me and Jethro figured out that's a small hog. And you heard what Pearl said. He ain't got no snow on, fella. He's bought us a house in them Beverly Hills. He sent our $25 million to the out there.
Well, you just chase on out after it. I'm staying right here.
She picks up the gun.
And I ain't afeard, neither.
Granny, I ain't leaving you here alone.
And I ain't a-budging out of this rocker.
Soon after, she and the rocker are on top of the pile of stuff in the back of the truck, which pulls away, and later heads down the palm tree-lined street. She sits by Duke and Ellie Mae.
Jethro, what does that sign say?
It says Beverly Hills.
You said that, Granny? We're buying. They call them hills? Why, we got moles that can push up higher ridges than that.
Well, leastways it's hills. We'll be among our kind of folks.
Meanwhile, at the Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills, a man steps into an office.
This deposit of $25 million to the account of J.D. Clampett.
J.D.?
As in Rockefeller. Elevates us to third position in capital assets.
The secretary takes dictation.
And assures our bank of... Come in.
A young man enters.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Drysdale.
All right, Taylor. Well, are we all set to give the Clampetts a red carpet reception?
Well, I'm afraid Mrs. Drysdale still isn't too happy, sir.
Yes, I know. Oh, my wife is very upset that I got the estate next to ours for the Clampetts. Says I don't even know what kind of people they are.
Do you?
I know to the dollar what kind of people they are. They're my kind of people. Loaded. Taylor? Have the gardeners got the grounds in order?
Yes, sir. But I'm afraid that's another thing your wife is upset about.
Oh?
Well, you see, your gardeners have been working on their lawn all week. Why, they've mowed it, trimmed it, fed it, clipped it.
I don't care if they lather it and shave it. This is the most beautiful mansion in Beverly Hills. I want every square inch of ground within those walls in apple pie...
He answers the phone.
Yes? Oh, hello, Margaret. No, dear, I'm very bit... What? Well, good heavens, did you call the police? I'll be right there.
He hangs up.
What happened?
The Clampett estate is being invaded by a band of outlaws.
Invaded?
Yes, they're holding the gardeners at gunpoint.
Drysdale rushes out. While at the front gate, the family holds three gardeners at gunpoint.
Sure is lucky we come along when we did.
That's the truth. The way they were slipping through that gate, another 5 minutes and that whole darn prison would have been empty.
In front of the mansion, the gardeners hold their tools with their hands up.
Jethro, you sure that's a prison?
Yeah, Uncle Jed. I seen pictures. Only thing is, how come they ain't no guards on them walls?
Probably done them in with them knives and things.
These killers, if I ever did see any. Fine neighborhood he's moving into. You hear that? Hot dealers, bobcats, and they see
him. I'm sorry. Somebody's calling the law.
I reckon he's going to be mighty grateful for what we done.
Later, Jed and Jethro stand in a jail cell.
Folks out here has got a strange way of showing they're grateful.
Drysdale arrives with a guard.
You've locked up one of the richest men in the country. Mr. Clampett, I don't know how to...
He talks around Jed.
I'm deeply humiliated.
And grabs his shirt.
What have you cutthroats done with J.D. Clampett?
I'm Jed Clampett, and I'd appreciate it if you let go of my Sunday shirt.
He does, stunned.
You're J.D. Clampett, the oil millionaire?
Yep, this here is my nephew, Jethro.
Howdy. Quickly, man, unlock this cell.
The guard opens the cell, and they step out.
On behalf of the entire city of Beverly Hills, I extend our deep and humble apologies for this unfortunate and embarrassing incident. Oh, I'm Reuben Drysdale, president of the Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills. My car is waiting to take you and your family to your new home. We want you to know how happy we are to have you, your handsome nephew, your lovely daughter, and your beautiful money, mother.
Drysdale smiles and ushers them out. Later, a car heads down the drive to the mansion's front gate, which is open.
Wait a minute! Stop this car!
It stops, and the family jumps out.
Mr. Drysdale, you tricked us. You just took us out of jail so you could bring us back up here to prison. Head for the hills, everybody!
They run away through the gate.
Oh, wait! Come back! It's not a prison, it's your home!
They keep running. Drysdale and his driver run after them up the drive. At the main street, the family splits up. This described episode of The Beverly Hillbillies, The Clampett Strike Oil, was produced for Movies for the Blind. Executive producer, Al Simon, featuring Bea Benaderet as Cousin Pearl, Raymond Bailey as Mr. Drysdale. The family keeps running. Granny leaps over a hedge. And that was The Clampett Strike Oil. Spoiler alert, they do eventually get convinced that their new mansion is not a prison, and we'll check out how they settle in next week. You might find Cousin Pearl's voice a little familiar. Bea Benaderet would later star in Paul Henning's series Petticoat Junction, but she may be best known as the original voice of Tweety's Granny in the Warner Brothers cartoons and as the original voice of Betty Rubble on the Flintstones. To find out more about the TV and the movies, about description and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast Creative Commons license. If you like the podcast, put it in writing by leaving a review on iTunes, looking up Movies for the Blind under Podcasts at the iTunes Store. You can also like us and follow us with exclusive information on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube, where we show you how it's done. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week, you hear? Take care. This is Movies for the Blind, episode 257, The Beverly Hillbillies, Getting Settled.
Well, now, why don't you bring your missus over tonight for supper, and I'll have Granny womp up a mess of grits and hog jowl.
Hello, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. we continue with another episode of the Beverly Hillbillies, which won the ratings straight out of the box, turning a star out of the Clampett patriarch maybe a couple decades after it was expected. Buddy Epson started out as a dancer, even as a child, and went on to movie musicals and as a model for Mickey Mouse's dancing style. He was picked to play the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz, then was switched to play the Tin Man. However, the aluminum dust in his makeup gave him a bad allergic reaction, making him so sick he had to leave the production. After recovering and serving in World War II, he got into television and westerns, and got attention for playing Audrey Hepburn's estranged husband in Breakfast at Tiffany's. Some of that attention came from Paul Henning, who decided he was the man to play Jed Clampett. Last time we found out how Jed, Granny, Ellie Mae, and Jethro got from the backwoods mountains with no electricity or phones to the sunshine and palm trees of Beverly Hills, California. Oil was found in a swamp on Jed's land, causing a corporation to pay him millions of dollars, and Jethro's mother, Cousin Pearl, convinced Jed that Beverly Hills was a place for rich people to live, and for kin to visit. We left the family with their new banker, Mr. Drysdale, trying to convince them that their new stately mansion isn't literally a prison. So let's find out what happens once they get in there. By the way, like with the Andy Griffith Show, while many episodes are in the public domain, the theme music is not, so different music has replaced it. First airing on CBS, October 3rd, 1962, this is the Beverly Hillbillies, and the second episode ever, Getting Settled. The Beverly Hillbillies. They ride in an old jalopy truck. Starring Buddy Ebsen as Jed, a thin, grizzled older man, with Irene Ryan as frowning granny. Donna Douglas as Ellie Mae, a young blonde woman in men's clothes. And Max Bayer as muscular, dark-haired Jethro. Created and produced by Paul Henning. The gates are open at the stately mansion. Written by Paul Henning. Directed by Richard Worf. The old truck pulls up to the front doors, where Mr. Drysdale waits.
Welcome. Welcome.
When Jethro stops, Jed stands.
Well, now, ain't that handy?
That, Paul?
Way the road takes a bend in here, it runs right by the front door.
No, Mr. Clampett, this is your driveway. It goes with the house.
They all get out.
Is this thing a high
house? Oh, yes, indeed. It was built by John Barrymore, one of our finest actors.
Pretty fair stonemason, too.
Granny's across the courtyard.
Hey, Jed! This here is dandy soil.
Fine, Granny. We'll commence plowing tomorrow.
But this is Beverly Hills.
Dirt is dirt.
Yes, I know, but why don't we look around inside, eh?
Drysdale leads Jethro, Jed, and Ellie Mae with Duke into a grand foyer.
Well, here we are. I hope you're going to like this place I picked out for you.
Jethro takes off his hat.
It's a trifle larger than what you're used to. But I feel a man with $25 million in my bank should live in a manner that... Come in, come in. This is your home.
They're all just staring around. Even Duke. Jethro is slack-jawed. Duke walks outside and the others finally step inside. Jethro heads up a curved staircase.
As I say, it may be a bit more than you're used to, but I'm sure you'll be comfortable. Now, my secretary will be over right away to help you with the hiring of servants or whatever problems you may have. She's a very efficient girl, Miss Hathaway.
Jed!
Granny steps in.
Jed!
And is quickly distracted.
Jed?
She approaches.
You and Jethro fetch in my stove so I can get some victuals to cook in.
Oh, you have a beautiful stove.
She turns to Drysdale.
Thank you. Fetch it in, Jed. You scare up some wood, Ellie.
No, no, I mean you have a stove already installed in the kitchen.
Where's that?
I'll show you. Excuse us.
He leads her out of the foyer.
Ellie, you go with Granny. She'll still need you to fetch some wood.
Sure, Pa.
Holding down her hat, she follows them. And Jed keeps peering around.
Uncle Jed!
On the landing.
Guess what? There's a whole other house up here.
Jed looks up past a chandelier to him.
Jethro, come down from there. Like as not, that belongs to somebody else.
Drysdale leads the women into the modern kitchen.
This is your kitchen.
They stare, confused.
Oh, and here's the stove.
They go to a tall oven.
Last word in food preparation.
Granny just looks at him.
And speaking of food,
he leads them past it.
You'll find everything you could possibly want stored right in here. See?
He opens a freezer full of food, and the women look at each other blankly.
Well, I'll leave you ladies to your culinary delights.
Au revoir.
Bon appetit.
Drysdale leaves the kitchen.
Talks gibberish.
You said a great deal of store in this year's stove, Granny.
They go back to it.
Well, we'll see.
Granny opens the oven door and pulls out a rack.
Ellie, you run out and fetch some wood. I'll get a fire to going in here and we'll see.
Jed and Jethro start unloading the truck.
It's all right for you to be missing school.
Oh, sure, Uncle Jed. They ain't straight in the fifth grade.
You in the fifth grade already?
Starting this year.
Don't seem like no time at all since you went with your ma to get you started in the first grade. You was 6 years old. No bigger than that.
Above his shoulder.
He drove clean over to Oxford. So you could go to the same school your pa went to.
You wouldn't know that town today, Uncle Jed.
Oxford?
Yes, sir. Well, that town has growed and growed and spread out and built up and just kept getting bigger and bigger. Where today, well, I bet you there must be at least 3 or 4 dozen people living there.
A place like that's all right to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Drysdale steps out.
Do you have any assistance?
No, thank you, Mr. Drysdale. We're just talking about Jethro here getting back to school.
Oh, well, we have some excellent educational facilities out here, Mr. Clampett. Where do you go to school, Jethro?
Oxford.
Yeah, you see, Jethro's ma, that's my cousin Pearl. She married an Oxford man, so naturally Jethro, he goes to school there, too.
I'm the champion crawdad eater.
At Oxford? Jethro put away 3 buckets of crawdads.
4.
And he's learned to cipher and everything. Cipher some for Mr. Drysdale.
Getting ready. He holds up fingers.
1 and 1's 2. 2 and 2's 4. 4 and 4 is 8. I have to take off my shoes to get any further than that.
I'm sure we're thinking of 2 different Oxfords. You see, there's one that's very, very famous and very old.
That's where Jethro goes to school. Been there since pioneer days.
That's how come it got its name. It's where the oxen used to ford the river.
So folks took to calling it Oxen Ford, and later on got shortened to Oxford.
Well, I'll be running. Oh, by the way, here are your keys. My secretary should be over very soon.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Drysdale, for everything you've been doing for us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Mr. Clampett. You see, I'm not only your banker, I'm your next-door neighbor.
They turned in the direction you gestured.
Well, say, how ain't that nice? Well, now, why don't you bring your missus over tonight for supper, and I'll have Granny womp up a mess of grits and hog jowls.
Well, you see, right now my wife is in Boston.
Well, that's too bad. When'll she be back?
Not too soon, fortunately. I'll see you later.
He walks off.
Well, thank you, Mr. Drysdale. So long.
Uncle Jed?
Jethro picks up a jug.
You reckon one of these days I can have me a little bitty old taste of Granny's moonshine?
Now, Jethro, you know the family rule about Granny's moonshine? You get your first taste on your wedding day and not before.
Well, Uncle Jed, that might be an awful long time. I ain't even got me no sweetheart.
How come?
Why, back home, every time I get me a girl, one of them there big fellas would take her right away from me.
Maybe out here in Beverly Hills.
Pa, could I please have the axe? I gotta split some wood for Granny.
Bet you, Jethro. Ain't this place got a wood pile?
Not that I can find. But I found a whole row of black old dead tree trunks, pretty near as high as this house.
Is it kind of big for you to tackle?
Well, shucks, no, Pa. They're only this big around, and all trimmed and topped and strung together with the black rope, so as no matter which one you cut, the others keep it from falling.
Somebody had a right smart idea there. Just the same, I think I'd rather have Jethro do the cutting.
Oh, Paul, let me.
Oh, cutting trees and chopping logs ain't no work for a girl.
I'm just as strong as Jethro.
You ain't neither.
I am so.
You ain't neither.
I am so, too. You want to wrestle.
Darn, too.
They run off.
Now, here. That ain't no fair fight. Somebody go get hurt. Now, yeah, you see, you're getting too rough. Jethro. Person can get crippled from a hole like that. Get up from there.
I can't, Uncle Jed.
Ellie Mae's sitting on his back.
You turn him loose and get up from there before I take the strap to the boot.
She lets go of his legs and gets up. Then Jethro stands.
Yeah, you get out there and chop down one of them tree trunks and saw Granny some nice logs.
Yes, sir, Uncle Jed.
Jethro takes the axe and heads for the house. Then gets a saw.
Could have whooped you if you hadn't tripped me.
She runs after him, but stops.
Come back here and sit down. I want to talk to you.
She takes off her jacket.
Then fight and square and I'll do it again.
She sits. And so does he.
That's what I want to talk to you about. Ellie Mae, you're getting too big to wrestle with boys.
I'm as big as Jethro.
Big that way, I mean, growed up. You're a young lady now. You gotta start minding your manners and fixing yourself up real nice and wearing dresses.
Paul, folks would call me a sis.
It ain't sissy for girls to act like girls. You see, Ellie, I raised you like a boy, and I was wrong to do it. I reckon every man liked to have a son, and you was my only young'un. And when your ma passed away, I just decided to turn you into a boy. By the time Granny come to help out, you was too wild to tame. By thunder, you could outrun, outclimb, outfight, and outshoot every boy in them hills.
Still can, Pa.
Yeah, but it ain't fitting. It ain't right for folks to go against nature. Now, look at old Duke.
Lying at their feet.
Reckon we could turn him into a cat?
Of course not.
Duke lifts his head for her.
That's right.
And she pets him.
Because nature made him into a dog. The same way nature made you into a girl. Here lately, she's getting more and more positive about it.
My ears is grown?
No, nothing like that. You're pretty.
Oh. Paul.
They stand.
I know you don't like it when I say that, but you like it when the young fellas around here come in saying it, and they will. Only they'll probably be using words, fancy words I won't even understand. But Ellie Mae, ain't nobody can ever tell you how pretty you really are, Sydney.
He holds her chin.
You're the living picture of your mom.
They hug. Later, at the Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills, Drysdale's car pulls up outside. Drysdale gets out from the back seat. His secretary straightening up a sofa as he enters his office.
You still here? I thought you were going up to the Clavert estate.
I didn't think it prudent for us both to be absent simultaneously. In the event of crises...
The only crises you have to worry about right now is keeping Mr. J.D. Clavert happy. Now get up there.
Tell me.
He sits.
How did you like the flamingos?
What flamingos?
I thought pink flamingos around the swimming pool would add a rather elegant touch.
Mr. Clampett is not a man educated to elegance. That will take time. Right now, there are more pressing problems.
Of course, getting settled, the servant problem.
Well, whatever they are, just get up there and solve them. Now, J.D. Clampett is this bank's largest depositor, and I'm making his satisfaction your responsibility.
I accept the mantle of responsibility with which you have cloaked my shoulders.
He stands.
And I shall so conduct myself that if this great financial...
He takes her elbow and guides her to the door, then sends her off and closes the door.
This...
Which is opened.
...was their finest hour.
He points out, and she leaves. Meanwhile, in the kitchen...
Andy Wood, all right.
Jed sniffs a log.
Got a lot of pitch and tar in it. Ought to burn real good.
Yeah.
Granny pulls out the rack.
That flimsy grate holds up.
Jethro holds another chunk of telephone pole.
This is top of that tree trunk. You want I should split it up, too?
No, just leave it outside.
Yes, sir.
He leaves.
This place ain't even got a wood box.
Yeah, folks don't need much wood out here. Remember what Pearl said? It don't get cool.
Yeah, I remember. It might not get cold in the day, but it sure freezes solid at night.
How you know?
I'll show you how I know.
She takes him to the freezer as Jethro comes back.
Ever been a fool in this here storage bin that's frozen harder than a rock?
She opens it.
Look.
Jed pulls out a large piece of meat and notices the plastic wrap around it.
Might have thin-skinned hog.
Bending down, he knocks the meat against the floor and straightens up.
But I'll be doggone.
Take me 2 days to thaw out that ham before I can ever cook it.
Jed places it back in the freezer, and Granny closes it.
Well, no better than store food up against the north wall. Tomorrow we'll dig us a root cellar and we put all this stuff in it. Jethro, go on out there and catch us a chicken.
Okay.
He goes out back as Ellie Mae comes in.
How you know we got chickens?
Place this size is bad to have chickens.
Ain't all froze.
Jethro searches around the pillars surrounding an in-ground pool with a classical statue of a woman pouring water into it. He freezes at the sight of a flamingo. Creeping down some steps to it, He stares at its long, thin legs. He curls down as its long neck extends down.
Are you a chicken?
He tries to grab it, but it runs off. In the kitchen.
Here's that bucket. You want it?
You take it, Ellie. See if you can find a creek. I gotta have some water.
You know a pump on this place?
It ain't even got a well.
Uncle Jed!
Yeah, boy, did you find a chicken?
I found something. I ain't sure if it's a chicken, a goose, a duck, or what.
Where is it?
I couldn't catch it. That thing can outrun a jackrabbit.
There ain't no goose or duck.
A chicken?
If it is, I was right about things growing bigger out here. That thing was this high.
Waist high for him.
Chicken? Ah, Jethro.
Honest, it's got legs this long.
Gibby's on the drumstick.
Drumstick ain't much. If we ever gets that neck, he's eating from now on. Commences here and runs plumb up to here.
Jethro? You ain't forgot what I said about Granny's jug of liquor.
I ain't been to Granny's jug.
You have your in first.
Honest, cross my heart.
Where'd you see this chicken?
Down by the cement pond.
Cement pond?
Uncle Jed, that pond is the fanciest thing you ever did see. Why, they are steps. So as the cattle can walk right down into it and get a drink. And up at one end, there's a lady standing there made out of rock. And she's pouring water out of a jar right into that cement pond.
Oh.
Well, that's how come that big old pink chicken to get away from me. Flew right over the top of that there rock lady, landed in that pond, and swam like an otter. Just flapping them big old pink wings and hollering.
What color did you say that chicken was?
It's pink.
Ain't I told you that stuff would stunt your growth?
Miss Granny, I didn't touch a drop.
You and me is going to the woodshed.
Jethro, you swear to be telling the truth?
So help me, Jefferson Davis.
Granny grabs his hat.
Your hat off when you speak of the president.
Granny, he ain't president no more.
She smacks him with it.
I'll have no Yankee talk in my kitchen.
Now, Jethro, you and me is going back out there and corner that chicken. Granny, you get your fire to going. Ellie Mae, you sweep up out front and keep your eyes open for that Miss Hathaway. I'm counting on her to take you in hand and get you in the right kind of clothes. Come on.
They disperse, and Granny puts on Jethro's hat. Later, Miss Hathaway pulls up to the mansion in a convertible as Ellie Mae sweeps out front with her back turned. Hathaway gets out.
You there, young man?
Ellie Mae turns.
I ain't a young man, but I sure do thank you for thinking so.
Good heavens, you're a girl.
Yeah.
I'm Jane Hathaway, executive secretary to Mr. Drysdale. And you, I take it, are a domestic of some sort? Cleaning girl, housemaid. Just what are your duties with Mr. Clapper?
Well, he sent me out here to sweep up. Well, he said you'd take me in hand and get me in the right kind of clothes and everything.
Indeed I shall. We have a complete servant's wardrobe from chef to chauffeur. Come with me.
They enter the foyer, where all the stuff has been unloaded.
What in the name of Thomas Chippendale is this? Has Mr. Clapper seen this disgraceful and unsightly mound of debris?
Oh, yes, ma'am. This is all his.
Oh, what charming antiques.
At that.
Just like you said, Jethro. Rock lady pouring water into a cement pond.
Yes, sir. And over there's where I seen that great big pink chicken.
They go to the steps.
Only thing is, it don't sound like a chicken. It makes a kind of hollering noise.
They look around, then down. Jed bends to some croquet equipment and picks up a white ball. They stare at it.
Reckon you'd make a hollering noise, too, if you was to lay egg like that.
Man, oh, man. That's what I call an egg.
Well, you won't have to worry about food now. Wait till she cooks this.
Later, Granny waves at smoke pouring from the oven.
That flame city stove don't draw worth nothing.
Jed returns with the ball.
Granny, look at this egg. What's all the smoke?
Stove don't work.
He opens it. And closes it.
Oh, just a stuffed up flu.
Ain't got a flu. Ain't even got a stovepipe.
Well, I'll get the shovel and a hoe and rake it out of there. You keep this egg.
He leaves it with her. She shakes it by her ear and taps on it. She knocks it on the oven.
Just like everything else out here.
froze solid.
Jed hurries through the foyer and out front. Through another doorway, Hathaway returns with Ellie Mae in a maid's uniform.
Charming!
Well, I feel like a dad blind coat.
Jed comes back with shovels and hose.
Just a moment!
Get stop now, I'll be right back.
He hurries to the kitchen.
Oh, that was my pa.
I take it he's a gardener.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Pa just can't wait to commence gardening.
Perfect. However, as though I admire his enthusiasm, I must forbid him access through the main entrance. Now, tell me about the rest.
Ellie Mae totters on short heels.
Is there a chauffeur?
A what?
Someone who does the driving.
She takes off a shoe.
Yes, ma'am. That's Jethro. Of course, I don't reckon he can stay around very long. He's got to get back to Oxford and go to school.
Oxford? He attends Oxford University?
Well, he just calls it school. Pa went to school there, too.
She sits.
Oh, yes. Old school time. Great pride, those Oxford men.
When Jed comes back, Ellie Mae stands.
Sorry, I couldn't stop before. Granny was having trouble in the kitchen.
Paul, do I have to wear this year's stuff that Miss Hathaway...
No, there can be no appeal from Mr. Clampett's orders.
Thank you, ma'am. Glad to see you taking a firm hand. Ellie Mae, that's right pretty. Makes you look taller.
She got me walking on peg.
She holds up the shoe.
Well, run in and show Granny.
And get rid of those old clothes, dear.
She limps to the kitchen.
Granny, I presume, is the cook.
Yes, ma'am, but she ain't too happy about it right now.
I shall deal with her directly.
She takes notes.
Now, let's see. Maid, gardener, cook, chauffeur. I understand Jethro is an Oxford man.
You bet he is.
I'm quite anxious to meet him.
Don't blame you. Fine-looking young fella. Single, too. And he's on the lookout for a girl.
I am only interested in the intellectual rapport which I would naturally have with an Oxford man. I presume he went to Eton as a boy.
If I know Jethro, he went to Eton the minute he was born.
Yes, of course. I suppose his father matriculated him.
I kind of think maybe it was his ma.
Oh, well, no matter. At any rate, he's an Eton man.
That he is. Matter of fact, Jethro won the Eton championship.
Oh, marvelous. What was he champion of?
Eton.
Yes, I know. But what was it? Cricket?
Oh, no. It was crawdad. I don't think even Jethro would eat crickets.
I was referring to the game.
Granny comes in with the ball.
Jed, where's the axe?
I bet you, Granny, you talk to Miss Hathaway.
He heads for the kitchen.
And just why does cook need an axe?
I've hit this with everything I could lay a hand to. I even whomped it with an iron skillet.
You are supposed to hit it with a croquet mallet.
All right, where is it?
I don't think I'll tell you. There is a time for work and a time for play. Now then, what are we cooking for Mr. Clampett?
Well, I don't know what you're cooking him, but if he wants any victuals from me, somebody better shoot a possum.
Possum?
You got a better idea?
But of course, a nice big fluffy souffle.
All right. You shoot it and you skin it.
You don't even know what a souffle is. What kind of a cook are you?
I'm a cook with a stove that don't draw, food that's froze solid, chickens that can't be caught, eggs that can't be broke, and a smart alecky city woman telling me my business. That's what kind of a cook I am.
Mind your tongue, little woman. I can have your job.
You sure can, and the sooner the better.
Jed comes back.
Jethro's coming in. Just wait till you see what he's got.
Thank heaven. Now I can have an intelligent conversation.
He carries in the flamingo.
I got that big chicken.
I hope it ain't as tough as it's egg.
That is a flamingo.
Oh, no, ma'am. That's my nephew, Jethro. Jethro, say hello to Miss Hathaway.
I did, ma'am. This the big dangest chicken you ever did see.
You go to school at Oxford?
Yes, ma'am. I'm in the fifth grade.
Stop ragging and wring that chicken's neck. Ellie Mae!
No, stop, you bardell! Don't harm one feather of that beautiful bird.
I've taken just about as much as I'm going to take from you.
Ellie Mae wears her old clothes.
Get the fire going under the big kettle outdoors.
Young lady, where is your maid's uniform?
I ain't going to wear.
Oh, yes, you are.
No, I ain't.
Oh, yes, you are, if I must subdue you forcefully.
They step away, struggling.
Don't! Don't! Try to tell you.
Ellie Mae has her down in a leg hold.
I'll settle on her, Ellie. You get the fire.
Ellie Mae gets up.
Granny, come on, let her up. Get off of her.
Hathaway stands.
You are discharged! All of you! That fire!
Drysdale walks in.
You are the most incompetent, insubordinate, belligerent group of domestics it has ever been my misfortune.
Hathaway!
Ah, Chief, you're just in time to help me take disciplinary action.
Defy it.
I've already told them.
Not them, you. These people are the Clampets.
Clampets?
Yes, that's right. Now go back to the office and pick up your severance pay. You are through.
Now, Mr. Drysdale, hold on a spell. I reckon there's been a kind of a misunderstanding. But this little lady's been a right big help to us. Why, she fit in just like one of the family. Matter of fact, her and me is going out hunting.
He puts Ellie Mae's hat on Hathaway's head.
Is that right, Miss Hathaway?
Yes, indeed.
She pulls it down on her head.
Yeah. Jethro, you can type that pink chicken back out of the cement pond. We're going out and shoot us a nice, big, fluffy souffle.
Jed hands her a shotgun, and she walks toward the kitchen ahead of him. Jed looks back, nodding and smiling. This described episode of The Beverly Hillbillies, Getting Settled, was produced for Movies for the Blind. Executive producer, Al Simon. Milburn Drysdale, Raymond Bailey. Jane Hathaway, Nancy Culp. Jethro, Granny, Ellie Mae, and Jed walk out through the front doors and wave at us. Associate producer Mark Tuttle, film editor Stanley Frazen. They keep waving, and sometimes Granny has to hold her hand up with her other hand to do it. Assistant director Frank Mayer. Music Perry Botkin. Filmways TV Productions Incorporated. And that was Getting Settled. We'll have one more episode for now, where Cousin Pearl and the oil man Mr. Brewster come back next time on Movies for the Blind. While Jed and Miss Hathaway made peace at the end of this episode, they never really did in real life. Nancy Culp, who played Miss Hathaway, was a major liberal, and Buddy Ebsen was conservative, and they often clashed on political grounds. Even long after the series ended, Ebsen campaigned against Culp when she ran for Congress in Pennsylvania and lost. To find out more about the TV and the movies, about description and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast Creative Commons license. If you like the podcast, put it in writing by leaving a review on iTunes, looking up Movies for the Blind under podcasts at the iTunes store. You can also like us and follow us on Facebook and Twitter with some exclusive information, and subscribe to us on YouTube, where we show you how it's done. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. We're back next week. Take care. Happened.
He got $25 million.
How long do you think that's going to last if we go throw it away on store-bought soap?
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. Let's do one more episode of The Beverly Hillbillies for now. Last time I talked about how Buddy Ebsen found TV fame relatively late in life as Jed Clampett. The same was true for the woman playing his mother-in-law. Irene Ryan became known as Granny, but that was after a 50-year showbiz career, which started with her singing in vaudeville as a little girl. She continued on stage, then in radio, in movies, and then in television. Originally, Bea Benaderet was going to be cast as Granny, but when Ryan put her hair up in a bun and got her cranky on, series creator Paul Henning and producer Al Simon said, "That's Granny." Even Benaderet had to agree and took the role of Cousin Pearl instead. Pearl is back for this episode. She's the one who convinced Jed Clampett that now that he was a very rich man from oil discovered in his swamp, the place for his family to live was Beverly Hills in California, although they have a lot of modern conveniences that they didn't have back home in their cabin. And Pearl was able to get her son Jethro to drive them in her truck. The Clampett's new banker, Mr. Drysdale, and his secretary, Jane Hathaway, are not doing a good job at getting them to understand how things like phones and electricity work. So let's see if they make any progress this time in the third episode ever. First airing on CBS October 10th, 1962. This is The Beverly Hillbillies and an episode called Meanwhile, Back at the Cabin. The Beverly Hillbillies. They ride in an old jalopy truck. Starring Buddy Ebsen as Jed, a thin, grizzled older man. with Irene Ryan as Frowning Granny. Donna Douglas is Ellie Mae, a young blonde woman in men's clothes. And Max Bayer is muscular, dark-haired Jethro. Created and produced by Paul Henning. In the stately mansion, Jethro examines the crystal chandelier hanging in the foyer. Written by Paul Henning. Directed by Richard Worf. Jed and Drysdale join him.
Well, Jethro, what have you got to say about that?
I didn't bust it, honest.
He's telling the truth, Mr. Drysdale. It was hanging in pieces like that when we moved in.
Yes, sir.
No, it's supposed to be like that. It was made that way.
It's been like that for 200 years.
200 years?
Hey, this house is older than it looks.
Jethro?
Oh, I plumb forgot. Granny wants to see you. Let's get out.
All right, Uncle Jed.
He heads for the kitchen.
Nice boy. His ma, my cousin Pearl, give me the notion to move out here.
Well, I'm most grateful to her. Oh, but first, I wanted to explain about this priceless crystal chandelier. It was designed and made for Louis XV, hung in the Hall of Mirrors at Versailles. Napoleon Bonaparte planned campaigns with the light of that chandelier. Talleyrand used it. Wellington, Disraeli, Bismarck, Wilson.
Mr. Drysdale, we're just plain folk. We don't mind a few things being secondhand. Getting back to my cousin Pearl, she's looking after the old home place for me. You ain't ever seen my family home, have you?
No, I haven't, Mr. Clavin.
It's a dandy.
Yes, those southern mansions are beautiful. I suppose it has the large white pillars.
It did, but we bring them along and put them on the beds out here.
No, you see, I was referring to wooden pillars.
Oh, I ain't never slept on one of them. We had everything first class back home. Sure hope Pearl's taking good care of that place.
Meanwhile, a car pulls up to the small Clampett cabin, where a horse is tied at the porch. Mr. Brewster gets out of the car. He steps around the front of the car toward the porch. As he approaches it, Pearl steps out, startling him.
Well, hello there.
Oh, why, you're Mr. Brewster from the oil company that paid Cousin Jed all that money for his swan.
$25 million, to be exact.
You ain't here to back out, are you?
No, indeed. Your cousin's money is safe in the bank in California. I just thought you'd like to know that I heard from the bank, and your family arrived in Beverly Hills safe and sound.
Oh, that is good news. My son Jethro drove him out, you know.
Yes, I know he did. Oh, I have something here from the bank. I think you'll enjoy it.
He takes a briefcase out of the back seat.
They told me at your house I'd find you here.
Yeah, well, I promised Cousin Jed I'd keep an eye on the old home place for him.
She puts on glasses.
It's a long trip from my house, but I'm glad to do it for Jed.
He looks through the case.
Yeah, well, you know, can I help you look for that money?
What is the money? Pictures of the estate that Mr. Drysdale, the president of the bank, purchased for him in Beverly Hills.
Oh. He shows her photos.
This is now the Jed Clampett estate.
Land to mercy, look at that. Why, it's bigger than the state capitol.
Quite a change from this place, all right.
He shows her the pool.
What in the world is that?
Oh, that's the swimming pool.
Swimming pool?
Yeah, it's quite ornate.
Oh, my son Jethro's gonna like that.
Meanwhile at the pool, Granny tends to a pot over a fire with laundry hanging behind her. By a big wash tub, Jethro crouches with a bucket, which he dips into the water.
Granny, when we's done washing, can I go swimming here in the cement pond?
Of course not. I don't allow nobody splash around in my wash water.
Ain't there no place else you can wash?
This cement pond's the only water we got. Place ain't got a well, it ain't got a creek. Ain't even got a rain barrel to catch what comes out of the sky.
Oh, when that banker fella seen me unloading your wash tub and scrubbing board, he said, why, you can throw that away. We don't use them things here in Beverly Hills.
Now, you listen here.
He pours the water in the pot.
I don't care how other folks live in Beverly Hills, but us Clampets is going to be clean.
Yes, ma'am.
May not have as nice as we have it back home in the cabin. Right in the house and everything. But we ain't gonna lower our standards.
No, ma'am.
She gets clothes from the tub.
Wrench these things out for me. We gotta get this tub back to the kitchen. Really fast. Yep.
He rinses them in the pool.
Being clean is a strict rule with your Uncle Jeff. Let me look you over.
She checks behind his ears.
Many the time we've been down to our last piece of fat. I'd say Shall I cook it to Edith, or shall I render it down for soap? He'd say no. Render it down for soap, Granny.
She hangs the rinsed laundry.
The Lord will feed us poor folks, but we gotta do our own washing.
But Uncle Jed ain't poor now, Granny. He got $25 million.
How long do you think that's gonna last if we go throwing it away on store-bought soap? Waste not, want not.
Meanwhile, Brewster shows more photos.
Now, here's a view of the entrance hall.
My stars and garters!
Why, the palace!
Whoever would have thought that my cousin Jed would be living in an estate like this?
Well, the credit is yours. You're the one who talked him into moving.
Oh, well, I put the notion in his head. But it was really kind of Ellie Mae, wasn't it?
Yes, his daughter will have a wonderful life as a Beverly Hills debutante. Can't you just see that beautiful girl descending this magnificent stairway?
I sure can.
In the foyer, Ellie Mae slides down the banister to Jed and Drysdale.
Oh, Ellie Mae, I don't reckon that's the way a young lady comes down the steps in Beverly Hills, is it, Mr. Drysdale?
No, not as a rule, no.
Oh, I can come down the other way. Watch this.
She runs back up the curved staircase, straddles the banister, and slides down head first.
How's that?
Well, that's not exactly what I had in mind.
Well, show me.
No, my secretary will show you. Oh, she's in town doing some shopping for you.
She hops down.
Oh, what's she getting me?
Well, now, that's going to be a surprise, Ellie, but it's some things you've been a-needing, and they're going to be pretty, and you're going to like them.
Things I've been a-needing? A set of muskrat traps. A three-blade frog sticker?
Nope.
A ready-made slingshot.
Now, Ellie, you way off the track. Now, you wait till Miss Hathaway gets here, and you'll see.
Yes. Well, I'll be pushing along to the bank.
Drysdale crosses the foyer to the front doors and steps out with Jed.
Now, don't you worry about your daughter, Mr. Clampett. When my secretary gets through with her, you'll think she's been to finishing school.
I sure wish my cousin Pearl was out here fixing Ellie up. She's a whiz at fancy sewing.
Oh, is she a dressmaker?
That woman can make anything. Why, she can pick up a handful of straw, and before you know it, she's made a hat.
That's remarkable. So she's a milliner.
Oh, she's a Clampett. Married to Bodine. I don't recall knowing the milliners.
Milliners are women who make hats.
That's Pearl, all right, but she's a Clampett. You talk about making hats.
Pearl made herself a hat one time, was shaped just like a bird's nest. And in there on the nest was this blue jay a-setting on her eggs. Well, sir, they come from everywhere to see that hat. To study it, to see how Pearl made it so as they could copy it. Boy, there was dozens of them from all around.
Hat designers?
No, blue jays. Never did catch on too good with people. For a while there, Pearl couldn't hardly go out of the house without a bunch of blue jays taken out after her. Sure wish she was out here. She'd have Ellie slick as a picture in a catalog.
At the cabin.
Yep. I ought to be out there in Beverly Hills helping Cousin Jed.
Well, he certainly has plenty of room for you. This mansion of his has 32 rooms and 14 baths.
14 bathrooms?
Yes.
He shows one.
A sunken marble bathtub. I can just see Ellie Mae having herself a bubble bath in there.
But she's sitting in the washtub in the kitchen using a scrub brush. At the cabin.
I tell you, Mr. Brewster, the more I see of these pictures, the more I want to get out there and help Cousin Jed. Of course, I wouldn't go without being asked.
Well, naturally.
She takes her glasses off and he puts the briefcase away.
You know, I think you should go.
I've been asked.
Well, now, it's not exactly my province. Why don't you telephone your cousin and talk to him?
Oh, why, they ain't a telephone within 40 miles of this place. Nearest one, I guess, is at the International Emporium, clean over to Oxford.
Well, I'll be happy to drive you over there.
Oh, I couldn't let you drive me all that way just to use telephone. Busy oil company man like you. That's 40 miles.
There's no trip at all in this car.
No, I couldn't do it. Why, folks that see me riding in this big, shiny car with a tall, good-looking city fella. Why, sure as the world, they'd think that... Let's go.
Well, what about your horse and buggy?
Oh, just untie Bessie. You go on home.
As Brewster goes to the horse, Pearl digs into her purse. She checks her face in a compact mirror, which she hides when he returns.
Well, Bessie's headed for home, all right. Mrs. Bodine, how long has your buggy been hitched there?
About an hour. Why?
Why, Blue Jay built her nest on the seat, and she was sitting on her eggs.
Oh, shoot. I wanted to wear that.
She gets into the car. Brewster closes the passenger door and looks back at the horse pulling the buggy away. Meanwhile, Miss Hathaway drives her convertible up to the mansion and stops.
Here's Miss Hathaway.
Wearing sunglasses, she gets out, then hurries around the front of the car to Drysdale and Jed.
Mon capitaine, je suis retour.
She takes off the glasses.
Ready for Ellie Mae.
Gentlemen, aided and abetted by the gossamer garments, exotic lotions, and...
She picks up a box.
...other feminine appurtenances within these cartons, I am ready to assume the role of Pygmalion and transform that barefoot galatea into a striking and sophisticated paragon of Beverly Hills...
The That's yes the hard way. Well, duty calls. I leave you in capable hands. Goodbye, Mr. Clavitt.
Thank you, sir.
Chief.
Drysdale leaves.
Well, that sure is neighborly of you, Miss Hathaway. You reckon you can handle Ellie Mae?
Uncle Jay, Granny says...
Jethro takes off his hat.
Oh, howdy, Miss Hathaway.
No. Bonjour, Jethro.
Carry them things in for Miss Hathaway, Jethro.
She turns to the boxes.
I think she kind of likes you, boy.
She does? Well, I can't take them into the house. That's what I come out here to tell you. Granny says that all the men folks got to stay out of the house while Ellie Mae's taking her bath.
Oh.
But isn't Ellie Mae bathing in the privacy of her own bedroom suite?
She turns away again.
Hear what she called you? Sweet.
Jethro smiles big as she turns to them with some boxes.
What's the matter with him? Why doesn't he answer?
Hey, he's just a little shy, I reckon. Ask him again.
Is Ellie Mae in her bedroom suite?
No, she ain't, darling.
Jethro hides behind his arm.
Never mind, I'll find her myself.
She goes into the mansion as he squirms.
Uncle Jed, I got me a girl!
You sure have, boy, and a city girl, too.
Yahoo!
Meanwhile, Brewster's car travels down a country road.
Some city girls I worry about. Jethro's such a good-looking boy. Every girl in the fifth grade was after him.
I hardly think anything serious can develop between boys and girls in the fifth grade.
Oh, I don't know. So far this year, there's been 3 couples out of Jethro's class get married.
Married? Fifth grader?
Pearl nods.
Parsons nearly as busy in that school as the teacher.
That's amazing. Oh, I've heard of...
Uh-oh, wouldn't you know it? There's that snoopy Elverna Bradshaw and her big mouth door sitting on my front porch. Oh, I can just hear the stories they'll start going on if they see me in this car here with you. Yoo-hoo! Elverna!
She honks the horn.
It's me!
Pearl!
Terrible gossip, that woman, always making trouble. She tried to talk Griney out of going to California. She ought to see Griney now. Living like a queen in that Beverly Hills mansion.
Granny carries the water bucket into the kitchen, where Ellie Mae keeps scrubbing in the wash tub.
I should have listened to Elverna Bradshaw and stayed home. We had a pump right in the house. Didn't have to choke water a quarter of a mile. Are you ready to get rinsed off, Ellie?
Well, not yet, Granny. Should have washed my hair.
No, you better wait till I can catch some rainwater. That pond water smells like it's got medicine in it.
I wondered why there's no fish in that pond.
Yeah, I reckon that water killed them fish. But don't you worry. My lye soap will kill anything that killed them fish.
Hathaway walks in.
Have you seen... What in the world's going on here?
Well, there's a bath going on. That's what's going on.
Howdy.
But I don't understand.
Well, then somebody ought to explain it to you, sissy woman. You see, first you heat some water. Then you put it in a great big tub like this. You put some soap in it, and then you get in it, and you start to wash, and that's what you call a bath.
Granny, you don't have to do this sort of thing in Beverly Hills.
Don't you listen to her, Ellie. Ain't you ever heard that saying that cleanness is next to godliness?
But of course, John Wesley said that.
And I bet he didn't live in Beverly Hills. Here, Ellie, dry yourself off with this nice big bath towel.
She stands behind the towel.
Girl.
And wraps herself in it.
I'll rinse off that old lye soap.
She opens it in front of herself as Granny pours on fresh water.
Did you say lye soap?
Ellie Mae wraps herself again.
That's right. I make it myself.
But that will ruin this beautiful girl's delicate skin.
I've been washing with it for 72 years. Look at my skin.
It's like leather.
Yeah. Nice, ain't it?
Ellie Mae steps out of the tub.
Granny, I hope you will forgive my momentary bewilderment at this primitive form of ablution, but please let me explain.
Well, first explain what you just said.
Well, Ellie Mae has a beautiful big bathtub upstairs.
Upstairs? It was hard enough carrying the water in here. I ain't going to tote no water upstairs.
You don't have to. There's a big, beautiful... Haven't you been upstairs?
No. Jed said that probably belonged to somebody else. Ain't that right, Ellie?
She's dressed.
Yeah. Paul said he heard tell that folks sometimes live one family right on top of another.
But that's only in apartment houses. This entire house belongs to you. And each one has his own individual bedroom suite. Come along and let me show you. And also the lovely things I brought from town.
Well, you go ahead. I'll be up directly.
What all did you bring from town?
Everything, Ellie. Everything from chapeau to pumps.
They leave the kitchen.
Pumps! Praise the Lord! Now I won't have to tote water.
On the front stoop, Jethro and Jed sit whittling.
Jethro? Yeah, Uncle Jed? Now, you're going to be keeping company with a girl. Is there any questions you'd like to ask me? What kind of questions? You know, about girls. How much you know about girls?
They softer than boys.
Yeah, I reckon. Generally speaking.
And they shorter and rounder.
Yeah?
And the hair's longer and it smells sweet when you snuggles up to
them. Oh, so you've been doing some snuggling, have you?
I've done more than that.
Yeah, I reckon you better tell me about it. Who was she?
Prettiest girl in the hills. Big Mouth Bradshaw.
Well, Verna's girl. I hear tell she's kind of fast.
Is she ever? Uncle Jed, I was walking past the cabin, and Big Mouth, she calls out the window to me. She says, "Howdy, Jethro." She says, "My ma's just made a big batch of cookies. Come on in and have some." And I says, "Sure your ma won't mind?" And she says, "Ma's gone, and so's Pa. I'm here all alone." Well, Uncle Jed, I was in that house before you could wink an eye.
Can't say as I blame you.
No sooner was I inside, the Big Mouth, she puts a music record on the phonograph machine and commences to sashaying around, a twisting and a turning.
Dancing?
Yeah, I reckon so. Anyway, she says, "Put your arms around me, Jethro, and I'll teach you the two-step."
What'd you say?
I says, "Listen, Big Mouth," I says, "here we are all alone. Your ma and your pa gone. And you think that I'm going to waste my time dancing? I say it's not me, sister. Bring on them cookies."
Jed looks at him and considers.
What she said?
Well...
Jed, you and Jethro can start digging the well. That city woman brought us some pumps.
That's fine, Granny. We'll get right to it.
She ducks back inside.
What'd that Bradshaw girl say when you said bring on them cookies?
Well, she just held up them cookies like this here. Kind of blinked her eyes at me and said, "Jethro, which do you think it tastes sweeter? These here cookies or my lips?" Well, Uncle Jed, right then and there's when I found out she was fast. I grabbed them two cookies and it took me 2 miles to outrun that gal.
Jethro, some one of these days, you and me's got to have a long talk.
Bruce Rooster's car continues on the road. Pearl puts her glasses back on.
Yes. He's a lady killer, that bar mine. While Verna Bradshaw's daughter traced him all the way home one day.
Sounds like Jethro has a lot of charm and sex appeal.
Oh, he has. It's funny how a daughter can take after her father and a boy can favor his mother.
She peers over her glasses. Then returns to the photos.
Yes. I ought to be out there looking after Jethro. You know Jed's going to need him to help garden a place this big.
Well, most Beverly Hills mansions have regular gardeners. And, of course, a complete sprinkling system.
Sprinkling system?
Oh, yes, indeed. That entire lawn is crisscrossed with underground pipes.
Land to mercy.
Meanwhile, Jed holds a doweling rod and Jethro a shovel on the lawn. They stop.
By thunder, Jethro, there's water all over this property. Ain't too deep, neither.
I know. Should I commence to digging?
Well, now let's get as close to the house as we can. That way the pump won't have so far to pull.
Robin! Jethro!
Oh, here comes your sweetheart.
Hathaway approaches.
It's Clampett. I cannot handle that daughter of yours.
What happened?
I opened that box of beautiful clothes, turned my back for a moment, and she bolted like a wild colt.
I was afraid this would happen. Where is she?
She's up there.
She points.
I'll go right up and talk to her.
Jed walks off.
Jethro, have you been upstairs yet?
No, ma'am.
Then you've got a surprise coming to you.
What is it?
Your sweets.
So are you.
No.
Ellie Mae sits in a tree, whittling.
Hey. Oh, howdy, Pop.
Wait.
He climbs up.
I'm ashamed of you. Running off from Miss Hathaway.
I didn't run away from Miss Hathaway.
What'd you climb up here for?
To cut a fork for that new store-bought slingshot she brought.
Did she bring you a slingshot?
Fanciest thing you ever did see. Just a minute, I'll hook it up and you can see for yourself.
She attaches straps to the ends of the wooden fork.
Look at that.
Jed takes the slingshot made with a strapless bra.
A store-bought, lace-trimmed, double-barrel slingshot.
He gives it back.
Ain't it a doozy? I don't know how good I can aim it, but it'll sure throw a heap of rock.
She practices shooting with it. In Brewster's car.
Yeah. They really need me out there. Well, I could work wonders for Ellie Mae with my fancy sewing and beauty secrets and hair styling and everything. Of course, I had to learn all those things, not having a husband to support me.
She peers over her glasses.
Didn't you say it was 40 miles to the town of Oxford?
That's right.
Well, we've already driven 110 miles.
Well, land to mercy, I forgot to tell you the turn off. Well, long as we come this far, maybe we ought to go right on to California.
He stops the car, kicking up dust. In front of the mansion.
I tell you, Granny, there's so much water here, you could shoot a load of buckshot in that ground and bring up a dozen springs.
I'll be right back.
She steps away. As a gardener steps to the sprinkler control, Granny returns with the shotgun and aims at the lawn. The gardener turns the control, and the sprinklers go on. Granny and Jed smile, and Jed approaches the lawn and its dozen sprinklers spraying water.
I ain't never missed yet.
She grins proudly. This described episode of the Beverly Hillbillies, meanwhile back at the cabin, was produced for Movies for the Blind. Executive producer, Al Simon. Featuring Bea Benaderet as Cousin Pearl. Drysdale, Raymond Bailey. Hathaway, Nancy Culp. Brewster, Frank Wilcox. Jethro, Granny, Ellie Mae, and Jed walk out through the front doors and wave at us. Associate producer, Mark Tuttle. Director of photography, Lester Shore. Film editor, Jerry Young. They keep waving, and sometimes Granny has to hold her hand up with the other hand to do it. Assistant Director Frank Mayer. Music Perry Botkin. Music Coordinator Dave Kahn. Sound Mixer Carl E. Zint. Filmways TV Productions Incorporated. And that was Meanwhile Back at the Cabin. Irene Ryan passed away in 1973, but she lives on in the Irene Ryan Acting Scholarship given every year through the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. Among the many young winners, Maria Enos, who Americans may know as the lead detective, Sarah Linden, on The Killing. No preview of the next movie, sorry, but I can tell you that it stars one of the greatest ever. We're so long overdue for this, Barbara Stanwyck. And frankly, I think that's all anyone needs to know to come back and check it out. To find out more about the TV and the movies, about description and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. If you like the podcast, put it in writing by leaving a review on iTunes, looking up Movies for the Blind under Podcasts, the iTunes Store. You can also like us and follow us with exclusive information on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube, where we show you how it's done. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.